So this is the March 20th, 2011 sermon titled The Watermelon Basket Revolution. And it's based on the Gospel of Mark, chapter 11, verses 12 through 21. Hope you enjoy it.
One of my most vivid memories as a kid was my mom's watermelon fruit baskets. I am in awe of my mom's ability to make watermelon fruit baskets. In the middle of the summer, she goes to the store and she buys not only the biggest, but the ripest watermelon that she can find. She cuts it in half and carefully, very carefully, in this way that I can't describe in words, scoops out little round bite-sized bits. And she scoops them out carefully till the whole underside of the watermelon is empty, and she places these juicy filled watermelon bites in a separate container. Then she goes for the cantaloupe. Then she goes for the strawberries, cutting them carefully in half. Then she goes for grapes of a variety of different kinds to add to the taste of the basket. Then the last thing she does that's not shown in this picture is she actually makes a handle on hers creatively. Watermelon fruit baskets in the summer are awesome. They're refreshing. They renew us. And of course, I was the first volunteer when my mom asked who would carry this to the party or to the picnic. Some of the watermelon made it to the party. And as this basket of wonder came to everyone, it was like the air of the community. My friends and family were amazed by how juicy each bit tasted in your mouth. How it had the ability to make you smile inside about how fresh and life-giving this fruit was to everyone at the barbecue. Watermelon fruit baskets. My mom's watermelon fruit baskets are legendary in my family. But there's another side to these fruit baskets. If they sit out in the sun for hours, they can get acidic. They can lose their flavor. They can be dull, dreary, not much fun to eat. And if you don't pick a watermelon that's ripe, a watermelon that's withered or rotten to the core inside, it can be a drag to any party. Like taking a bite of a styrofoam ball. If it's not the ripest, the juiciest fruit, don't even bother. It's all about the watermelon fruit basket. What if, though, we decided today to film the passage that we're talking about? What if we got a film crew and could imagine this passage today through the ability of film? Here's what it might look like. Our movie would fade in to a beautiful fig tree. And Jesus would walk to this fig tree. And at this fig tree, he would look up at it. Because it tells us in the passage, it wasn't the right time for the figs to be ripe. But Jesus said it anyway. He says, "May no one ever eat of your fruit." Then the voice of the narrator, James Earl Jones, would come on and it would say, "And the disciples heard." And of course, the question for us is, what did the disciples hear when Jesus cursed that fig tree? Because what we don't understand is in that ancient Mediterranean culture, figs had a symbolic importance, especially with Jesus saying the figs weren't in season. Jesus wasn't just cursing a literal fig tree. There's more going on underneath the surface of this passage. So, as every good Jew in the first century world would know, figs are good. Figs are a part of our diet, but also God, throughout the whole Bible, talks about fresh fruit and figs. God talks about the people of God themselves being fresh fruit to the world. We are watermelon fruit baskets to our world. But then the fruit imagery goes beyond that. The fruit imagery talks about God's blessing upon those ripe and fresh fruits, and God's cursing upon those fruits that are rotten to the core or withered. So we have this imagery, this beautiful imagery that the Bible is working with. And then on one more layer, the disciples would have heard fig tree. Their ripeness and their witheredness had to do with the temple, the biggest building in the ancient world. It had to do with if the people of God were living out their mission to the world. They were either ripe or rotten. So the prophets would use this imagery to challenge the people to live by God's dream, to live by what God had set out for them to do. We are called to be watermelon fruit baskets to our world, to our community. The camera would then fade to Jesus and his disciples, and it would overlay this beautiful land in Jerusalem where the temple of God sits. The temple that took tons of money, tons of passion, tons of energy to create sat at a pivotal point on that hill. Jesus and his disciples in this film production walk in through the gates. They step up the stairs. Then that camera comes right on Jesus' face. His face is filled with purpose, determination, even passion inside. And before we know it, Jesus is in full action. He's casting out the buyers and the sellers in the temple. He's overturning the tax collectors' money and the dove changers. And he's not allowing anyone to enter the court of the Gentiles, the place where merchandise was sold. He has shut down the temple at this moment in time. The camera would fade to the disciples' face. They are shocked. But they remember the fig tree. The fig tree said, what Jesus said is the fig tree is cursed. What Jesus was suggesting is the temple system is cursed, rotten to its core. And on December 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks sat down in a Montgomery public bus. Rosa Parks sat down, and this time she decided it was going to be different. When the white gentleman came to her and asked for her seat, she decided to say no. So then the white gentleman, in anger and fury, went to the bus driver. The bus driver came back and said, "Ma'am, you've got to move." She said no. In the face of insults and abuses from the other people on the bus, she said no. She made a public demonstration that love doesn't create boundaries like that. That inequalities because of race is wrong. So then, of course, she shut down that bus. And of course, the police had to come and escort her to prison. And in the days and in the months and in the years to come, for one full year, the Montgomery bus system was shut down in Montgomery. And finally, at the end of that year, the Supreme Court Justice of the land ruled bus segregation unconstitutional. One courageous woman, in a public demonstration for rights, with love filling her heart, set a tsunami in place that transformed the southern parts of America. An incredible moment. In the same way, in this passage of Scripture, Jesus, he's not saying that buying and selling things is wrong. It's a part of human life. He's not even saying that temple sacrifices are wrong. This is how an ancient Jew would have worshipped God. What he's saying is the system from the top down is rotten, corrupted to the core. He was making the economic appeal that if you charge regular common people too high to worship, it is unjust. He was reminding the people of their great vision to be light and life to the world, to be fresh fruit for all. The camera would then scan to that beautiful temple stair where Jesus stood on that stair and he was about to speak. And he said, "Is it not written that my house shall be a house of prayer for all the nations? But you have made it a den of robbers." Ouch. The camera would follow Peter's face. And Peter's face had that sort of, that impression on it that he was thinking deeply about these words. He remembered these words from somewhere. The camera would then backflash to Peter's childhood. And in Peter's childhood, he learned how to fish with his dad. And as he's out on the fishing boat with his dad, he shared with his dad what he was learning in Hebrew school. And he learned about the prophet Jeremiah, who told about the temple losing its mission, losing its vision, about a temple that built up its walls and inside of it held a den of robbers. In this vision that Jeremiah talked about, God called the people to be beyond the four walls in mission, in service, in sacrifice to the local community. And he called that place the den of robbers, the refuge for people who didn't want to follow what God had done. And then he told his dad, of course, about the Isaiah passage, how Isaiah had talked about God blessing all people, no matter what. The fresh fruit of the watermelon basket is given to all, everyone, no one without excuse. The camera would fade back to Peter. A smile came on his face. Jesus was reminding them of their roots. He was taking them back to what it meant to be God's people, to what it meant to be a blessing to the entire world, not just a mini fortress in the city that had pretty walls. They were called to bless everyone in that world. As the camera scanned away from Peter's face, he also remembered the talks in the streets. So you have to understand how deep this system of inequalities had gone in the first century world. In the first century world, Rome called high taxations from Jerusalem, incredibly high taxations, so they could expand their empire towards the world. And then, of course, the high priests, the leaders, the Jewish authorities, they taxed highly the merchants. And then the merchants taxed highly the common people. It was a whole system in the temple of inequality. The rich got richer and the poor got poorer. One more thing. In this world, in the first century world, there's no middle class. There's no people like us. The common people were on the bottom, 95%. The elites, the top 5%, ruled. So it was a have and have not society. So when Jesus speaks of the temple, that you've made it a den of robbers, you've forgotten what you are supposed to be about, he's saying you are neglecting 95% of the people. You are neglecting the common people. That's why people were so glad that he was speaking the truth to the powers that be. Then the camera would go into a secret room in that temple, a dark room. We would hear that dark and mysterious music that something bad, a bad plot is in the works. The high priest is there, as well as the scribes. And the high priest says, it says he heard what had happened when Jesus shut down the temple. And the high priest says, we've got to find a way to kill him, because they were afraid of Jesus' message. At this moment in Jesus' life, he made a public demonstration, just like Rosa Parks' demonstration, that the temple practices of squeezing out from the common people is wrong. That system of self-interest and greed is bankrupt. It's rotten to the core. In Chris's picture that he drew for us, he drew one of the columns of the temple fading away, cracking at its core. That's the message that Jesus says. When we let the system of self-interest and greed rule in our life, it's destined to crack and fall, even though it doesn't look like it on the surface. Then the camera once again would fade back to that beautiful fig tree that, of course, now was withered. Peter, this time, is walking up to the fig tree, and Peter remembers. He remembers the message of Jesus that the Gospel of Mark shared with us in chapter 8 and chapter 9 and chapter 20. He remembered the words, if anyone wants to be my disciple, He must deny himself or herself, take up his cross, and follow me. And Peter remembered that Jesus called them to a life of service, a life of sacrifice, a life of compassion. And the system of the temple called them to a life of greed and self-interest. Jesus was telling us in this passage, there's a better way to be human. There's a way beyond the indifference and the callousness. There's a way to true, full, and abundant life. There's a way of compassion for all people. There is abundance in our world, not scarcity. And that's the choice that we're left with as we journey with Jesus to the cross. Will we offer that fresh fruit to all those, or will we offer that rotten styrofoam ball? There are many of you here who offer fresh fruit all the time in this community. Teachers who teach, those who work and own local businesses that see themselves not as their self-interest, but providing services and goods to our community. High quality food to our community. There's a way to see the way your careers work, the way of the cross. Sacrifice, service. Not the way of building your own empire. And every time we choose the service, the sacrifice, the compassion, we partake in crushing a system that's rotten at its core. We show people through acts of love, through acts of forgiveness, even when we're cut off going on White River. This didn't happen or anything. We show that person love and grace. Even when our coworkers offer us grumpiness or mean-spiritedness, we show them love and grace. And by that way, we knock down this temple of self-interest and greed. So the camera from ancient Palestine sort of does an upward movement. You can see sort of Google Earth in the background as it journeys west to the United States of America. Then the United States of America comes down on God's state, that's Colorado. As it pans down on Colorado, it comes to God's side of the state, the western slopes. And then it comes closer and closer till all it sees is the rightful United Methodist Presbyterian community. All of your faces. James Earl Jones comes on once again and it says to us, will we choose the system or the cross? Promoting ourselves or dying to ourselves? Old fruit that's cursed or fresh fruit that blesses the world? Amen.